GNC558. It's Tuesday, March 9th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a part of the Tech Podcast Network. Everyone, I got a great show lined up for you tonight. And yes, we're almost time to head off to South by Southwest. We'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But you know what comes next. Strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go-no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
5.
Button, who's got the button?
4.
There is no cause for alarm.
3.
Everybody hold on to something.
2.
Just press the button.
1.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii via the Geek News Central studio overlooking Greater Oahu. Hey, tonight's show is also sponsored in part by Audible, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. We'll be talking more about that a little later in the show. Hey, everyone, welcome to the show again. My name is Todd Cochran. Of course, get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. Of course, check out our archive podcasts available via the podcast link on the website. And, of course, if you're new to the show, hey, welcome to the family. Welcome to the Ohana. And those of you that are longtime listeners, hey, thanks for being here. Thanks for continued staying subscribed. And, of course, tuning into what I call the hottest show in tech. At least in my own mind, right? All right, everybody. Hey, again, if you're new, hey, the best thing to do is get signed up for our newsletter. Our newsletter contains all the content that I'm going to talk about tonight, all the links to all of the articles, listener-submitted links, et cetera. So I'll have that all up in the show notes. Plus, we're doing a special swag giveaway right now. We'll talk about that here in a second. And the only way you can really get the information on that is through the newsletter. So get signed up for the newsletter. And, of course, subscribe to the show. You can find all the RSS feeds, iTunes, Zune Marketplace, whatever it may be, on the main website, of course, at geeknewscentral.com. And, of course, being subscribed guarantees that you'll get the content downloaded into your portable media device or the consumption device of your choice, whether it be a BlackBerry, an iPhone, a Zune, whether it be an iTouch or an iPod, whatever it may be, or any other media player anyway, you can do that through subscribing to the show through your favorite podcatcher. Well, what's going on here? Weekend. This past weekend, I turned into a plumber. You know, my wife got up Saturday morning and she said, "Honey, there's no hot water." I'm like, "Well, that's nothing new here in Hawaii. We have a solar hot water heater. And so we really leave the electricity switch off on the hot water. So I said, "Well, go turn the switch on and, you know, let the hot water tank heat up." And obviously the kids ran it out when they're taking a shower last night, or I did, or she did. And she goes, no, there's no hot water. So I got out of bed and she was in the kids' bathroom, which was odd. And I was like, "Well, what's the matter?" And she's flipping the faucet handle and there's just this drizzle of water coming out. And I'm like, "Oh, that's not good." Long story short, the faucet in that sink is 10 years old. And I said, "Well, go down to the local big box store and pick out a new faucet." And, you know, I told her what kind to get. I says, "You know, take your time. This is because if we're going to put a new vanity in this bathroom anyway, I want you to make sure that we don't have to rebuy faucets later." So she came home about an hour later with two, not knowing which one I would like the best. I'm like, no, this is your deal. So we got it figured out. And then I spent a couple hours changing that stuff out. And be honest with you, it was harder to get the old faucets out than to put the new ones in. That was a piece of cake. But had one little small snag. You know, he turned the water sources off, and one of the sources didn't completely turn off. There was a push gasket, so I had to shut the house water off. And I turned into a plumber. But it's all good. It's all part of about a home ownership, right? Saturday night late, I knocked out a Berry Cast. So if you want to check out what's going on with the latest at the Blueberry Podcasting Community, you can go over to berrycast.com at brrycast.com. There's a link over there, a little video I did about 15 minutes, talks about what's going on. And of course, I hope that you guys are checking out what's going on. We're at techpodcast.tv. Lots of developments over there. We're starting to add more content contributors. So let me know what you think of techpodcast.tv so far. Do you like the content? Do you like the layout? Haven't had too much feedback on that. So give me as much feedback as possible. Hey, I want to point you, those of you that are actually can see the screen, when I'm turned, you can't. When you guys look on Ustream, when you guys are looking back behind me, and you guys want to see a little trick here, and I shouldn't do this to the audio. Matter of fact, I won't. See the reflection of the computer in the screen? Well, I can actually get rid of that by opening the door a little bit further. But do you see the difference in light? The light that's above the Geek News Central sign and the light that's below it. You notice how nicer it is? Well, I went and purchased three LED lights. Only two of them, I got the right kind. So two of those lights have been changed out, one on the other side and one that's behind my humidor. But see how much difference, how much better that is instead of that garish yellow, and they've got a nice white on the bottom one. So hopefully by the time I get back from all this next 20 days of travel, I'll get that switched out and change the lights back to just these little tweaks I make in the studio, having fun with. And after, since we rearranged into the new configuration, headed out to Austin. Leave Wednesday night, get into Austin. Oh boy, probably 2:00 in the afternoon Thursday. So it's really pretty late for me, considering I'm gonna be doing the red eye out. And I got a show. I got to do a show Thursday night for you. And I'm trying to figure out a way to do something live, kind of interactive, something where we can involve some other people. So if you're in the Austin area and you'd like to come hang out and be part of the show, we might even just do it in my hotel room. I don't know. So if you're in Austin, holler at me, okay? Geeknews@gmail.com. And we'll have a lot of fun with the two shows one show I'm going to do in Austin, and then I leave there on Monday. I actually stay at the show 3 days, and I go down to San Jose, and I'm actually going to be in the San Jose area all week. Then we're going to have a listener meetup on the 19th, so that's on. We haven't just decided where yet. So I've just, a number of you, matter of fact, somebody in the chat, Dale had said, hey, let's meet up. And so again, if you're within striking distance of San Jose Friday night, we'll pick a time and let everybody have time enough to get probably done from work. And I don't know if you guys want to go home and shower and then come out or whatever, but we'll do something in the San Jose area on the 19th. We're still marching forward. My team is for NAB in April, so I'm excited about that. We'll be doing a big meeting on that tomorrow night. And got a number of you have actually requested sticker and swag stuff. Now, check this out. Of course, those of you that are on listen to the show audio, I'm holding up right now just a regular envelope. So I got one here from Jason. He sent me a self-stamp addressed envelope. We got one here from Mark. And then the envelopes get bigger. I got one from Dave that's a little bigger. And then my good friend Sam in Albuquerque, he sent a huge one. So Sam, you got the right idea, my friend. You did. Yeah, maybe I can find a t-shirt to stick in there. I don't have a lot of t-shirts and stuff, but we'll see what I can find. If you want to send a self-stamped address envelope to me, you can. All you got to do is get signed up for the newsletter. I'll provide the address to send that to, and then I'll get these things stuffed and get them back in the mail for you. Hopefully I can do that tomorrow. I got a whole bunch of other stuff I got to ship too, so hopefully I can get that all knocked out so you guys aren't waiting for 20 days until I get back to Honolulu to get your goodies. So anyway, you can do that. And it's basically, the information's in the newsletter. That's how you get the address. And feel free to send out. Again, if you have comments on tonight's show, geeknews@gmail.com. geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. Over here on the Ohanasaurus tonight, I keep getting this. It keeps popping up, and Norton is saying, hey, you need to set up a backup. I don't want to do a backup. Quit annoying me with that pop-up message, but it's what happens when you're trying to keep everything clean on the screens. The software sometimes doesn't cooperate. Okay, let me, I got to do a start one piece of software here and that I didn't do earlier on. But I'm ready for South by Southwest. I really am. I'm kind of excited. I'm leaving my agenda kind of flexible so that I, you know, I don't get wrapped into a bunch of stuff that I don't necessarily want to get wrapped into. And so that should be good. And again, if you're going to be in the area, my cell phone number is on the, actually my contact number is on the website at geeknewscentral.com. Feel free to reach out to me. And when I'm down in Austin and, whoa, almost knocked over that glass of water. That would not have been good for a keyboard. So anyway, I look forward to going down to Texas to that event and hopefully drinking in moderation and having a lot of fun, that's for sure. All right, let's take care of a little business here. And, of course, GoDaddy.com, longtime sponsor of the show. And really, they really help keep the lights on here. And it's important that if you're looking for a domain name, dedicated server, virtual dedicated server, shared hosting account, whatever it may be, when you get over to GoDaddy, don't forget your geek here, Geek News Central, and use my promo codes. The promo code Todd will save you 10% on non-domain orders. Todd20 will save you 20% on 1 year shared hosting accounts. Geek5 will save you 15% off. The Aloha code will save you $20 on orders of $75 or more. So Aloha, that's a good one that a lot of people used last month. Don't forget, ComSale gets you $7.49.com's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, renewals and new registrations. So thanks for GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor here. Now, tonight, we're introducing a new sponsor to the show, and we're going to run this sponsor a couple times a month in lieu of GoToMeeting. And again, of course, GoToMeeting continues to be a sponsor here, and you guys have heard a lot of information about that. But tonight, I want to talk about Audible. And, you know, we've been working with the Audible folks for a while to get them to come on to Raw Voice and become a sponsor, and they started out with the with a number of shows, and we kicked that off actually today. And so I spent a few hours today kind of getting familiarized with the Audible product. I signed up for a free trial myself, and we'll talk about that free trial in a second. But they've got a library of over 75,000 books, and I was pretty impressed because I thought that the books would be older, and I found a lot of new releases in there, which surprised me because I thought it would be, you know, a book comes out, then the book on tape stuff comes later. But really, some mainstream books were out. And when I travel, up to this point, I've been using my Kindle and just reading. You know, I buy stuff off of off Amazon. But today, I went ahead and downloaded a book and actually was trying it. And I was pretty impressed because I thought, well, this is so close to, you know, listening to a podcast, and many of us are too busy. How many of us have time to really sit down and read a book or two a month? I don't think most of us do, but I do know we have, you know, some time in our cars and so forth when we're maybe not listening to podcasts. But I think Audible has succeeded in really filling a niche market here, and they carry titles in business, classics for fiction, history, romance, mysteries, thriller, sci-fi, fantasy, self-development. They got kids' books and so forth. And the best thing about this is that as a listener of this show, you can now get a free 14-day trial. And make sure you read the disclaimer on the website as you're going through and signing up for that trial. But get free audiobooks and supporting the show by doing so. And get that free 14 trial by signing up today at Audible Podcast. It's audiblepodcast.com/geeknews. Same thing as my Twitter name, Geek News, audiblepodcast.com, Geek News. And we'll be talking more about Audible as the month goes on. But having not had a lot of exposure to these guys up to this point, I knew about the product, but really hadn't checked it out. And I actually thought, wow, this is really close to consuming media now, or actually exactly how I've been consuming media up to this point. The best thing is you can listen on CD, you can listen on your iPod, your any other mobile media player. There's a whole variety of different ways to consume the content. And so it's really cool. So check it out, and I'll have a link up in the show notes for you. Thank you all. If you decide to support me on this new sponsor, it's greatly appreciated. And we hope that Audible stays a sponsor here for a long time. It's basically all driven by how you guys react to it. So thanks for the ongoing support with all the sponsors. Okay, let me go ahead here and get into the regular content. That's what you guys came for. And let me go ahead and let me flip this over here so I can see this. Okay. And those of you that are on the chat on Ustream, I probably won't be watching that too much. So just be advised on that. But I'm going to start out with the first article is over on Ars Technica talking about the best electric key is the one you always have with you. And, you know, you think about that for a second. What do we always have with us? Well, for the most part, I think most of us walk out of our house with a regular set of keys, right? Our cell phones. What else do we walk out of the house with? Our sunglasses. So the question is, at what point do you forego traditional keys and have some sort of an electronic key? In other words, maybe your iPhone being that electronic key. And there's a patent in place by Apple right now called iKey. That's what they're terming it as. It's based on a device such as the iPhone. You can use it's based on an input motion. So in other words, you stand in front of a door and you go two down, two to the right, two to the left, one up. You know, you have to put in like this key sequence by moving your hand. Now, that would be, you know, if someone's taking a video of you, they actually could probably capture your moments. But if it's tied to your phone, unless you lose your phone, you're probably pretty secure, just like if you lose your regular keys. Also, there's been talk of them putting in some sort of having some sort of interaction with a Wi-Fi device or some sort to get access to a door, whatever it may be. So this is kind of cool that they're considering doing this. You know, in Japan, and of course I got my phone on my charger here, what they do with their phones is they just wave it in front of vending machines. They can get cigarettes and get sodas, or they sometimes just put it right up against the vending machine and it issues it, and it of course takes a micropayment out of their, applies it against their bill. And we haven't quite got to that point yet, but I'm going to be talking about a cool app that I'm going to be using at South by Southwest a little later in the show that is starting to bring in some of that micropayment type of stuff into our smartphones as well. But anyway, this first article, again, Ars Technica about the electronic key. And would you guys feel safe using your cell phone as the key to your house? But what would be the employment cost on that? Probably pretty high. All right, let's talk just a little bit about this representative today that has caused a firestorm and left the House of Representatives. Representative Eric Mesa resigned from Congress today, but you know, while political stuff aside, did you know that he was the individual that really put Time Warner's feet to the fire last year when Time Warner was talking about putting in bandwidth caps? He was the individual that announced publicly that he would introduce a bill that would limit such caps, and he did so in June of 2009. It was entitled the Broadband Internet Fairness Act, and it would simply make it illegal for major broadband internet service providers to offer volume-huge service plans imposing rates, terms, and conditions. That did not go anywhere. It got stuck in committee. And at this point, it doesn't appear that it's going to have any traction. But apparently, Time Warner and some other companies are pretty happy this guy's gone. So, irrespective of what he did in his personal life and what caused him to have to leave the House, we basically have lost a bandwidth cap opponent from Congress. So we'll see if the internet service providers take advantage of this and try to start imposing bandwidth caps again here in the near future. So we'll keep our eyes peeled on this, and we'll see. I predict we'll give them 60 days. Once this guy is gone 60 days, he will probably try they'll probably try to start pushing this again. Because, I don't have this opponent in Congress anymore. I can go ahead and, you know, impose our will amongst the people. So we'll see what happens with it. All right, over on the BBC. Now, this one here kind of scares me just a little bit until I read the actual context of the article. And for those of you that, actually, let me switch to the other video source here. Take that down. The BBC is talking about a lip-reading mobile phone. You're thinking, what does that mean, Todd? Does that mean I can point my camera at someone that is talking on their phone and the camera will pick up and be able to do lip reading? No, not quite. What they've done is, how many of you been in a restaurant or a store and, you know, you hear this, you know, hear that woman or man that are talking real loud on their phone and they're being very important and, you know, they think you need to hear their business. Don't you, you know, those type of people, you just want to rip their phone out of their hands, disconnect it. And, you know, we've all seen those folks, right? Well, this new technology could allow the ability for those that speak loudly to just hold the phone up to their face and speak without really speaking, just lip service, you know, basically doing, you know, moving their lips. And this technology could basically lip read, and it basically is using electronic signals produced by muscles used when someone speaks. So this device was shown at CeBIT in Germany, and it relies on a technique called electromyography, which detects electrical signals from muscles, and it's commonly used to diagnose certain diseases, including those involved nerve damage. Now, how they would get the receiver on a cell phone in order to you know, basically detect this, I don't know. But at this point, they're using some Bluetooth interaction, and so far, this has very high possibilities of making it to market. Can't wait. This would be a great one, right? For those, you know, you just almost like, hey, here's a service you need. But I think people that are rude like that, they're just rude in nature, and I don't think they'll ever change their ways. Hey, we're in Computer World. They've got an article on where to store your videos. And then when I first read this, I'm like, oh, does this mean, you know, where should we archive our videos? But this is more designed for Mac users. And the question was asked, where's the best place to import and store organized videos? iPhoto or iMovie? And what are the pros and cons to each? Or should I just store video in a separate folder? And this goes into some pretty good techniques you should use if you're a Mac user on how to organize your video. Matter of fact, the Mac will almost do it automatically for you, but there's some pretty cool tips in here. I'm not going to get into this specifically, but depending on which software you're primarily using with the Mac, if you're using if you're using iMovie or iPhoto, depending, again, which type of media you're importing, we'll give you there's some suggestions for both. So I have this linked up for you in the show notes to check out. But good tip there. Now, a good article in New York Times today talking about Pandora. How many of you are listening to Pandora? I have not. I have not went over there. As a matter of fact, Brian, our creative director at Raw Voice, he is a big Pandora fan. He loves the iPhone interface. He says it's great, and he raves about it. And he likes the way it picks music for him to be able to listen to when it's streaming. And but there's a story behind Pandora talking about their business model. And I have to laugh here because it's just like any other entrepreneur. There, you know, were times of very, very deep struggle. The guy had like 11 credit cards maxed out, and he was begging his employees to work for free. And what amazed me about the Pandora story and what truly sets this company apart is that the CEO did 348 pitches to venture capitalists and angel funders. So he went out and tried to get money 348 times before actually finding someone to invest $9 million in the company. That happened in 2004. And he actually only took $2 million of the $9 million. He went back and paid all of his employees back pay for what they had worked for free. And of course, they survived the whole, the whole issue that was going on. Matter of fact, they were instrumental in making sure that streaming services weren't going to have to pay these super high, outrageous streaming fees back to the RIAA and so forth. But right now, they're getting around 35. When they introduced the iPhone app, they had about 35,000 new users a day joining Pandora from their cell phones, doubling the number of daily signups. And right now they're looking, they're on their way to $100 million in annual revenue. So pretty good story in the New York Times about this company. And really, it gives all companies hope that if you're out there struggling and, you know, really trying to work hard to make it happen, you really, it's, you just got to work. And, you know, sometimes companies fail because there's just not enough motivation behind the founders and the people working at the company. And this obviously was not the case with the Pandora team. It takes a lot to ask someone to work for free. It really, really does. It's a big challenge. All right, let's go ahead and shift speeds here a little bit. Let's go and talk a little bit about space. Let's talk about the space shuttle specifically. The president is going to doing a major push in April to defend his plan to mothball the shuttle fleet. And, of course, there is nonpartisan action going on right now in the Senate to try to circumvent that shutdown. And I asked for feedback on the last show, and I know we got a number of voicemails. I don't know if anybody responded to this specific issue, but this is definitely coming to a head here where there's going to be another battle played out on the Hill over really where the direction NASA is going to go. You know, why don't we leave the direction of NASA to the scientists? You know, you had President Bush announce an initiative to go back to the moon and beyond. And basically the president took that initiative and tore it down and basically removed a bunch of the provisions that would have, you know, made us getting closer to go back to the moon. And, you know, so there was a whole bunch of stuff. We've spent a whole bunch of money for nothing. You know, why don't we let the scientists and the folks at NASA determine where we're going to head? Don't you think that would be the smart thing? You know, politics aside, you know, if we're going to have a president come in every 4 to 8 years, however long the individual's in office, and they're going to change the direction, these types of programs take a long time, and there's a lot of money being spent. I don't know. I just don't know if it's a wise expenditure of taxpayer dollars. Now, if there's something big and lofty, you know, JFK, obviously, we wouldn't have went to the moon without JFK's desire to land a moon on, land a man on the moon. And so, you know, you understand that. And I think when the prior president made his, you know, lofty goal to get back to the moon, it was a big thing. And I don't know if the current administration is going to be micromanaging all that or not, but I'm almost at the point where we should just, you know, let the scientists do what they do and let them determine their own direction. But, you know, I know. What do you guys think? I'd love to hear your feedback. Geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline 619-342-7365. Now, this one here ought to make you really worry a little bit. Major internet service providers have helped fund a BitTorrent user tracking research project. This is a pretty amazing. Researchers from the University of Colorado have published a technique for tracking BitTorrent users. And it's available online via PDF. I have this in the show notes tonight. And really what they've done, all they really did was join in actively and then probing torrent swarms using low-cost cloud computing services. And the University of Colorado claims that their methods allowed them to monitor the entire Pirate Bay torrent site for as little as $13 a month using EC2. That's shocking. That's, first of all, you can't get a server started for $13 a month on EC2. So I think the pricing's a little wrong, but that's really, again, not the interesting part. The work appears to have been funded in part through gifts from a company called FollyCipher. It's a broadband ISP consortium. Three major national ISPs funded this round of BitTorrent tracking research, not the MPAA or the RIAA. And again, we talked about the ACTA just a little bit and the Global Three Strikes Law. And I just, the writer here wonders if this could be evidence of the internet service provider support of the Global Three Strike Law and based upon what they found from this study. So your internet service providers were spying on you in your peer-to-peer usage through a third party funded by a consortium they belong to. So while they didn't really directly spy, the results of that spying was fed back to them. I find this a little bit disheartening because, you know, ISPs at this point are protected under safe harbor rules, and they're not supposed to be going and snooping around. So I guess this indirect sponsorship of snooping around is okay, But the second that the ISPs are found to be directly snooping, in other words, directly snuffing their networks and using that negatively, they're held liable. They're, you know, the copyright holders can come back upon them directly, and their right to fair, you know, those the Sunshine Laws doesn't protect them anymore. So I don't know. We'll see here what's going to happen with this. But if you're a peer-to-peer user, just be aware that you're, you know, your ISP may have been involved in snooping on what you're doing on peer-to-peer networks. All right, Google is obviously spending a lot of money. And matter of fact, I think we're going to see some announcements tomorrow by Cisco on spending money, because they're getting ready to announce some initiative that will transform the web or the internet, which is a pretty bold statement. So there's lots of speculation going on for the announcement. It happens, I believe, at 8 a.m. Eastern or 9 a.m. Eastern tomorrow. I believe it Pacific time. I don't think it's going to be Eastern, but going back to Google spending money, you know, they've got this huge war chest, and we all know that Google is, you know, silently working towards really kind of usurping Microsoft, and Google has purchased Docverse, and Docverse is a product that makes it easier for you and I to move existing PC documents to the cloud. I've been working a lot with documents in the cloud, and I don't know if I've completely fallen for it just because it's not as dynamic of an environment as working, let's say, in a Word document. I know I store a lot of stuff in the cloud, but Microsoft put a pretty good spin on this, saying that, hey, this is future proof that customers want to move their media to the cloud, and you know, their long-stated strategy of software plus services. So the question is, how many of you are starting to move your personal documents to the cloud, or I like Google Docs? How many are familiar with Docverse and what this brings to the table? I'm kind of curious what that means for you. One thing I did pick up this weekend, I don't know if I have it here, was a card scanner, a business card scanner, card scan. Best money I've spent in a long time. Very good product. Now I just need to find a good CRM software to go along with it. But if you guys are dealing with a lot of business cards, let me show you this stack. For those of you that are listening, I've got a stack here that's about, oh, maybe an inch and a half. I think there was 85 cards. Total time to scan them and make sure that the editing was right was about 30 minutes for 80-some business cards. Now, while people don't normally get 80 at a time, this is my portion of the CES coverage, the interviews I did at CES, and all the business cards that were associated with it. It beats sitting in front of a typewriter and punching these babies in by hand to a contact system. I highly recommend that software. It works good in that card scan device. So again, they're not a sponsor. They're not paying here, but good experience by me on the hardware side. Let's go back to, let's talk a little bit about the environment. And this is a bit of a dirty subject or stinky subject, but there has been an invention. It's a disposable toilet. It's a biodegradable and self-sterilizing bag for people of the toilet disenfranchised world, which probably equates, as they predict, estimate here, about 40% of the worldwide population does not have good facilities per se. And this bag, basically, created by a Swedish entrepreneur, it's simple. And essentially, once the bag is finished being used, it can be knotted and buried. And then inside the bag is a certain type of chemical that breaks down the waste into fertilizer, killing off disease-producing pathogens found in feces. The bag's called the pee-poo, and is it's not only sanitary, but it's also used once the biodegradable part of it happens, can be used to grow crops. So pretty cool stuff here, and I don't know how much this thing's going to cost, but this is good. And I don't know, again, it looks to me by the packaging on it, it looks to me it would be a little bit expensive, but definitely an interesting development. And, you know, everyone's got to go. So if you're going to go in the wild, might as well have one of these with you. All right, what to expect from HTML5? Boy, man, the discussion on this just continues and continues and continues. And the folks over at InfoWorld have weighed in. And there's a lot of frightened companies right now. because, you know, there is a monumental shift that's taking place. And a lot of battles are going on. We've talked about this several times on the show already. I'm not going to go into it in a lot of detail here. But a lot of companies are developing standards on their own. You know, you look at what Google's doing. You look at what the folks at Mozilla. So I think what it's going to be is, I think it's going to be many years before new standards are adopted by the W3C. And, you know, the road ahead remains a pretty rocky one. But we're going to have HTML5 compatible browsers very quickly. And really, what that means for all of us is much easier deployment of different types of websites and media. And it goes into that a little more detail, but I have a link up in the show notes. I'm totally excited about this and what this means for really those of us creating content out there. And even if you're just putting stuff up for moms, if moms are actually recording videos and want to put up on the internet, it's going to get much, much easier. It really, really is. All right, over on Tech Dirt, apparently the New York Post, which is a News Corp owned company, is continuing to essentially source articles from bloggers and not give credit. Now, as you may know, most of these companies are crying foul about, you know, bloggers republishing stuff and not giving credit where credit's due. But an individual recently, just this week, wrote an article talking about a sign, some sort of a sign that he found at a Chuck E. Cheese in Harlem. And the blog post picked up some momentum in the New York City area. And a couple of days later, the New York Post, quote unquote, had an article about the very same sign, and which two reporters reported on. But here, this obscure topic about a sign in a Chuck E. Cheese in Harlem, which would not have been picked up by anyone else. Let's face it. And then the New York Post writing a very similar article and never linked back to the original blog post. So you just wonder, at what point do bloggers start taking these print media folks to task and say, hey, copyright violation, you have, you're not sourcing back to me. Naughty you, you know, please take the article down. I don't know if that's, it'll ever come to that, but it is kind of curious that this is not the first time this has happened over at the New York Post as well. So, they shouldn't be crying wolf all the time on bloggers. Tonight, I found a link to a article about low power broadcast radio stations, and I really have never. The geek in me would love nothing more than to run, you know, a broadcast, some sort of broadcast station here in my community. But the rules on all this is so strict, and, you know, really, you can't do anything that has an effective range of over 200 feet from the transmitter, which, you know, in essence makes it worthless. So you maybe have three or four neighbors that can tune in to whatever you're putting out, but they're pretty concise rules here. The FCC is actually published, because they've gotten so many inquiries about low power broadcast radio stations, that they put guidelines up for people that want to run one. So I have this up in the show notes for you. Be forewarned here. If you go over the power limits that they set forth in this document, $10,000 to $75,000 fine, okay? So it's not cheap. Be careful out there if you're running one of these. And remember, the FCC can kick your door in at any time without a search warrant. That's right. Without a search warrant, if they figure or if they feel that you are broadcasting something in the neighborhood that should not be being broadcast, they do not need a search warrant to do that, as many people have found out. So that's one of those rules that are out there. You think, oh, they have to have a search warrant to come to my house. Oh, no. They can bust your door down and come in and do a shutdown action. They can't do anything else. They just shut the transmitter and seize the equipment. But they very well can do that, and they do. Hey, let's talk about the Microsoft browser elections that's happening in Europe. a lot of smaller browser companies are starting to see some impact from this. The folks over at Firefox said, we've seen just a tick, nothing very, very big. But some of the smaller browser share have seen big increases, double the number of downloads per day and so forth. So I know we got a number of listeners that are in Europe. How many of you have been affected by this? How many of you have had to take the selection on which browser you want? Love to hear how that how your experience was with it, what type of selection you made, or did it change anything? If you're listening to this show, you probably had half the browsers loaded on your desktop already. Talk a little bit about Newegg. I like Newegg. I shop there from time to time. They actually have some of the better shipping rates to Honolulu, and not always the best price, but they're usually pretty hard to beat when I compare to different types of online stores for electronic goods. And being I don't have a lot of selections here in Hawaii, I do order a lot of stuff from Newegg. But Newegg shipped about 300. Intel, let me see here, what version of the chip was it? It was a i7 chip, Intel i7. It doesn't say what model it was. But anyway, 300 of these that went to customers. When the customers opened them up, the boxes had misspelled words on it. The boxes had, inside from manual, had a pad of paper. The chip itself had no pins on it. It was just a metal slab of something. It really wasn't a chip. It was a counterfeit. And boy, oh boy, this has gotten Intel's attention. It's caused Newegg to basically sever a contract with the distributor. There's been another company in the mix that basically were doing cease and desist letters for some reason against sites because a company called IPEX was the company that was at fault, but a company called D&H Distributing was the one that was really fighting back the most and saying, hey, take articles down anywhere their name appeared. But Newegg said that D&H was not the company that was involved. I guess it was the i7-920 CPUs. 300 of them. But Newegg has responded very publicly and very quickly and made sure that everyone's getting replacements and Intel is investigating. Would that trip you out? Now, the question is, how did those get in the supply chain? I hope this makes its way through the whole investigative process and they report on that. I hope we hear the end results of this. All right, you guys hear about the Energizer Bunny? He keeps on going and going and going. We've all seen those commercials for years, right? Well, this kind of scares me a little bit. It appears that since 2007, Energizer has unknowingly been distributing a backdoor Trojan as part of the Energizer Duo software. So be forewarned, if you've installed the Energizer Duo software on your computer, and since 2007, there's a file which is thought to be a legitimate file used by the USB battery charger was instead a backdoor Trojan that allowed remote access to an infected computer. Unbelievable. The backdoor Trojan listens on port 777 for commands from a remote location. Unbelievable that this went 3 years. 3 years before figuring out. Since being alerted, Energizer removed the software and issued a press release stating that a vulnerability has been found and that they discontinued the product and offered software to uninstall the backdoor. So if you run into trouble, Energizer's got some help for you. The effects of the virus is minimal, luckily. And so be aware there. If you are using any type of Energizer software, you need to look at this article real closely. Hey, over on Engadget. Let me actually bring this up for those of you on Ustream. This is pretty cool. And I am really big into power management right now. Actually, I keep bringing up the wrong... let me click the right button here. Okay, here we go. This is called Powerhouse. It's an e-monitor. It lets you manage power use down to the circuit. As we all know, energy prices are not getting any less. Matter of fact, I got my electricity bill today. It was $300.37. And yes, we pay very high per kilowatt hour here in Hawaii. And I don't have AC. So it's not because I'm running my AC. It's probably part of it to do with this office or the studio. But I have a little device called a kilowatt that I went through and measured all of my basically major appliances to see what the typical power utilization is. But this device will actively manage household power use. And prices for installation on this starts around $800. But and it basically is going to tie into an iPhone app. You'll actually be able to see what circuits are using the most power and possibly even shut off power to certain circuits, which is pretty cool. So if you want to shut down the power of the kids' room, and maybe there's a computer running in there, and you remotely say there should be no power draw being done in the kids' room, you can command this thing to shut down a circuit. This is pretty cool stuff, and I can't wait until all our houses get really smart and basically all of our appliances check in with this and report how much power they're using. It really has the ability to change the world. Now, at what cost? I don't know. But this is pretty cool stuff. It really, really is. And at some point, we're going to have circuit breaker panels in our house that are going to, you know, give this information to us automatically. We'll be with new home builds. It'll come standard. But until then, there'll be these third-party solutions starting. And I don't know what the recovery time for cost on that would be here in Hawaii. Probably not a long time. But what I did do when I reset up the office, I zoned everything. I zoned all my gear so that when I'm not doing the show, I press two buttons and it shuts down about 80% of electronics in the room. It actually removes power to all transformers, all of the standby powers, all that stuff gets removed. And really all that's left is a couple of UPSs that are supplying some other stuff. But we've only been in ploy here a couple of weeks on that. And I just have to remember to make sure to click both of the buttons. I mean, the key is to put them on timers, I'm sure. But I hope that will, quote unquote, help me lower my power bill here for at least this portion of this room. And I encourage all of you guys is when you're moving furniture and you're basically, the missus say, honey, I want the entertainment center moved from here to here. Get smart in your rewiring process, because there are times when you don't need to have the DVD to have power to it. You don't need to have power to that once in a while used VHS. You know, all this stuff that's basically sitting there blinking at you all the time with a power draw. You know, put that on a different circuit or a different power strip. And then when you're not using it, just, turn that off. And all those little bits of kilowatts that are being burned in those every month, even though it might be each item be a few pennies each, or even, let's say a dollar, it's still dollars back in your pocket. And get smart wiring up your house that way so that non-essential stuff gets basically completely removed from the power source. Now, of course, some power strips themselves are power drains as well, even if they're off. So you have to look at your power strips as well. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Verizon. Verizon Wireless 4G LTE network testing promises significant faster speeds than the current 3G networks. They say they're going to be available to 100 million Americans in 25 to 30 U.S. markets by the end of 2010. Verizon Wireless trials with its LTE network have found peak download speeds between 40 and 50 megabits per second. That's an absolute best case scenario. Peak upload speeds between 20 and 25 megabits per second. Whereas they're saying probably the average data rate, what they found in Boston and so forth, there's an average data rate of 5 to 12 megs per second. Any of you in Boston that listen to the show have the Verizon LTE? What are you guys seeing for speeds? They're reporting as well that the uplink speed could be as much as 2 to 5 megs, which is pretty high. I can't wait. Come on, Verizon. Let's get this thing rolled out nationwide. And give Sprint and Clear a run for their money. All this, all these big broadband solutions and wireless wise that are coming to us is going to really, really change things. It really is. All right, as I said early in the show, Cisco Systems made an announcement that they're saying will forever change the internet. announcements planned for 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'm going to be up at about 5 a.m. here. And so I'm going to be tuning in at 6 a.m. to cover it live. So this is, you know, for a company that size, a public company, to say that this thing is going to change, that will forever change the internet. Now, Cisco announced they're getting out of the Wi-Fi business today. So is this hardware? Is this acquisition? They're sitting on a pile of cash. So maybe they're announcing some way to alleviate wireless spectrum crunch with new technology. I don't know. But if you're holding on to Cisco stock, it could be a good day tomorrow at the market. It may almost make some wish, I wish I'd have bought some stock in Cisco. But they don't make statements like that unless it's going to be totally evolutionary, because they can really get hammered by the SEC for, you know, making these forward-looking statements like that unless it was really going to be a major announcement. So we'll see what they have to say tomorrow morning. All right, over on Gizmodo. And I was not familiar with this app. It's called the Air Video. It's the best iPhone. Let's see if I can bring this up here for you on Ustream. It's called Air Video, the best iPhone video streaming $3 can buy. And what I like about this is that if you have videos on like a Windows Home server or something that you can access remotely, you can watch videos from a network-attached storage device from your home through this iPhone app. This thing is pretty cool. It converts on the fly, and they've got available bit rate where you can set the bit rate level for live conversions. This thing is pretty cool. I haven't downloaded it yet. I just found it tonight. Anybody using this thing? App Air Video. Again, the best, according to Gizmodo, the best iPhone video streamer $3 can buy. I have got to get me this. I'm going to definitely be checking this out. And again, he pointed at the Air Video server at his network attached storage, suspecting that something would snag. He said, my laptop wouldn't have had the CPU power to convert the video in time. My 801.11 network would get clogged, but nope, Air Video happily chugged away, sending a real-time stream of my videos right to my phone. This has got to be the coolest thing. So here's the app that I'm going to recommend you go out and buy. I will have had this on my phone for a couple of days by the time the next show comes up, and I'll let you guys know about this. But I think this is an exciting one. So again, Air Video, you can find it on the App Store. All right, now, talked a little bit earlier about micropayments with mobile phones. The folks at South by Southwest, actually this company has been working with bars in the South by Southwest party area. And I guess they got about 30 different clubs that are going to be available. You can pay your bar tab with an application called Tabbed Out. It allows the users to order, view, and pay their tabs at local bars. This is perfect. The Tabbed Out is only available right now at about 35 venues in Austin. Hey, if you're in one of those venues and you want to pay your tab with Tabbed Out, this is going to be the way maybe you can get out of there a little quicker. Many times, doesn't it irritate you? Often you'll get into a club and you want to leave and you can't get your tab. But anyway, it lets you set your tip and everything else. So this is cool. You can link it to a credit card. They charge a fee to do this. It's similar to Taxi Magic that many of you use in some big cities. But hey, anything that helps you get out of a club faster is better. Now, I would imagine that depending on who I'm hanging out with, that on the app it says total of $13. I'll be lucky if that bill's $130. Anyway, so I'll be playing with this Tabbed Out. For those of you going to South by Southwest, it may save you a little time at a bar or nothing, or maybe it will become a total fail whale. Who knows? We'll see. Over on GigaOhm, a survey was done. Actually, I don't think GigaOhm run it, but a national survey was done that where the people say the internet is a fundamental right. 4 out of 5 people said Four and a five adults in more than 26 different countries agree. And this was a poll that was sponsored by BBC World Service. The poll asked 27,000 adults about their attitudes toward the internet and found that 87% of those who regularly use the internet believe that access should be the fundamental right of all people. I agree. I think it is. The survey also found that most web users are positive about the internet. Close to 80% said they felt it had brought them greater freedom. 90% said that they thought it was a good place to learn. And just over 50% said they enjoyed spending their time on social networking sites like Facebook and MySpace. Hey, I took all of my classes, all of my college courses online. All of them. I never once went to a classroom setting. I did everything on my computer. And, you know, I was talking with my wife about, we got, of course, my oldest is 13 years old that's living here in Honolulu. And I'd say, hey, you know, for the first 2 years, in order to say, because, you know, I'm looking down the barrel of that bill coming due in 5 years, actually less than that, 4.5 years. And many of you are in that boat of paying for some kids going to school. And I got two that are back to back, a 13-year-old, 12-year-old. So I'm going to have two in college at the same time. Yes, we're going to need more help with the sponsors than keeping the lights on. But I said to my wife, let them go to school online for the first 2 years. The tuition cost is low. They don't have to, of course, they're going to miss the first 2 years of the college experience, but let them take the classes online. They can, as long as we can get them engaged and do it, it'll save us a lot of money. She is vehemently against it. And I'm sure I'm going to hear some opinions on this. So for those of you that have had kids in college here recently, did your kids do the first couple of years online? Did they start at a community college? Did they go to the major university later? You know, doing a 4 years at a major university, sure, it looks good on the old resume. But hey, 2 years at community college and 2 years at a major university, that's okay, right, too? So I don't know. I'd love to hear you guys' feedback on this. But, you know, why are we not, you know, everyone should be able to go to college for 4 years online and never have to step foot in a classroom. Be honest with you, going to school online is much harder than being in a classroom. You have to dedicate yourself. You have to. If you don't, you're done. You stick a fork in you. You'll never make it through the classes unless you really do the work. And some schools are different. Some schools make you come in and take the test. Some schools make you do it online. All my tests were online, and I could I was given 45 minutes per segment of a test, and generally the tests were 20 questions. So it wasn't like you had time to flip through the book to find the answers. You could find some if you really were desperate, but 45 minutes to work 20 questions is not a lot of time. So you had to study. So I don't know. Love to hear you guys' feedback on that, on going to school online. And again, this links back to the survey results about net being a fundamental right. And, you know, for parents, I think it's a great way to save money. GigaOM as well has a good write-up on what you need to know about the National Broadband Plan. Talks about wired, talks about wireless, talks about adoption rates, talk about national purpose. In the whole genre of what the FCC is about ready to announce on the 16th, which I'm sure will be a big news day when it comes to this. But good overview. I have this linked up to you in the show notes. The Electronic Frontier Foundation has posted an article today basically saying all your apps belong to Apple. And they have basically publicized the developer program license agreement. And for the very first time, most of us are getting a look at what Apple requires developers to do and not do. There's a ban on public statements. Section 10.4 prohibits developers, including government agencies such as NASA, from making any public statements about the terms of the agreement. Now, how the EFF got this document was they filed a Freedom of Information Act documentation to get the contract, or basically the license agreement, from NASA. NASA being a government agency, because they've got a NASA app. Another thing is App Store only. Section 7.2 makes it clear that any application developed using Apple's SDK may only be publicly distributed through the App Store. Bans on reverse engineering. No tinkering with any Apple products. In other words, no jailbreaking. And here's the kicker. Here's the thing that so many developers have been hit with. They have the right to kill your app at any time. Section 8 makes it clear that Apple can revoke the digital certificate of any of your applications at any time. Wow. And they're only liable for up to $50 in damages. Oh, wow. Oh, little announcement on the iPad. We know it's going to be available April 3rd. But also, we know that some of the apps that are found on your iPhone are not going to be making the transition to the iPad simply because they look bad. That's the reasoning. A new site today was launched called MediaGazer at M-E-D-I-A, Gazer, G-A-Z-E-R.com by the folks that brought you Tech Meme. And this is basically talks about the media. And we can watch what's going on with print and major broadcast media, you know, stories that are happening with them. And we can basically watch them self-destruct via MediaGazer.com. Love the article that Ars Technica did about why ad blocking is devastating the sites you love. I actually put up a post on it. I could not say this any better. They wrote up a article about folks that are running ad blocking software. And I know many of you that listen to the show do. But at the same time, that is impacting many of us negatively. And really, I'm not going to forego anyone's right to run it. It's because they can. Nothing's going to stop people from running it. But this write-up really hits home. I got a bug in here that's flying around, just trying to attack me like three times now. This article really goes into, you know, the impact it's having on small publishers and developers and, you know, sites like mine and Ars Technica. They ran an experiment. They ran an experiment where they made all of their content look like an ad. So when people came to the website, all of the articles were gone. The people actually couldn't see the ads, but they couldn't see the articles as well. They did it for 12 hours, and man, they got huge, huge mob of people criticizing them for doing this experiment. But I wouldn't ever go to that extreme. But you guys, check this out. I'd love to hear guys' feedback on it. I know some sites are really annoying. I must admit there are some sites that are over the top. And I try to put stuff on Geek News Central that is over in the sidebar. It's not intrusive. It's not popping up in front of your face. It's when you're scrolling across the text on the screen, stuff isn't busting up and causing you to curse and have to close a little X button to get, you know, to actually read the article. So I understand that some of these sites are really intrusive, and I try not to do that at GNC. So I hope you white label us when you're running your ad blocker so that you let the ads pop up on the site. It really does help. All right, Google improves its translation tool. Well, this is an article in the New York Times raving on how good the new translation tool has come from Google. So what I did was I went to the translation tool and I wrote a short letter to my wife. It starts out by saying, "My dearest Shoko," and it goes on to a paragraph or two. And I printed it out and I handed it to her and I said, "Does this make any sense?" She goes, "What are you trying to say? What does this mean? I don't." And she's like, "I showed her the original and it only got like maybe 10% right." So at least from English to Japanese, two thumbs down on the Google Translate. So I encourage those of you that are fluent in a second language to try this out. I'd love to hear you guys' feedback. Now, of course, it's probably Spanish and French and German. Those are probably pretty straightforward. Japanese is tough in any regards when it comes to kanji, hiragana, and katakana. And it looks like they use katakana in the translation. It's a little bit of kanji mixed in there. But I'd love to have you guys try it on people you know. that can speak other languages, and let me know how the translation software works. I think the New York Times article is a total puff piece because, I'm sorry, she said, this does not, I said, if I sent that to your mom, would she be able to read it? She says, they would call me and ask me if I had freaked out. Really, it was that bad. So don't do any English to Japanese translation on the Google Translate site. All right, if you've got a Ford, Ford is adding security and other features to Sync. And as you know, the internet is coming to cars and so are security systems to keep viruses and hackers out of our vehicles. So Ford Motor plans to announce on Monday a set of data security technologies for Ford Lincoln Mercury vehicles that have Sync. And of course, Sync is a system that lets car owners connect digital media and players and Bluetooth-enabled mobile phones to their vehicles' entertainment systems. So Sync is available on almost all mid-range cars. I think it starts about $395. And I'd love to have Ford on here as a sponsor. Anybody got a contact at Ford? Introduce them to me, please. But this is a feature. I really like the Sync product. I really do. Now, on my Mazda that I have, the entertainment system in that car needs a lot of work. It really does. They need Sync in that car, not what Mazda has provided. I can tell you that for sure. All right, WordPress is being used more and more as a web content management system and as a CMS. And a lot of smaller companies are using it as a CMS. They're not recommending it for, you know, huge sites. But WordPress continues to make gains in that regard. Pretty cool stuff by the folks over at PC World. All right, if you're in Colorado and you are an Amazon affiliate, you know already you're done. Colorado has introduced sales tax into the system for all net sales. And Amazon has said, hey, sorry, affiliates, we're not going to play this game. Your affiliate accounts have been canceled. That happened here in Hawaii while there was a threat of this same exact legislation going through. Hawaii luckily walked away from that in 2009 and have not reintroduced it. But I was underneath the same gun here with affiliate links from Amazon. But those of you in Colorado, you're out of business until something happens for that to be changed. Got a good article good deep science article about the Milky Way and its formation. I won't go into details on that because I'm running long here. And good news on the advertising front for those of us in new media, U.S. advertisers spend more on digital than print. So that's good news on that regard. And here's the last thing, and this one's probably going to get a lot of reaction. Once again, lawmakers are working to craft a new comprehensive immigration bill, and they have settled on a way to prevent employers from hiring illegal immigrants through a national biometric identification card. All American workers would eventually be required to obtain this. This is under joint legislation between both Senator Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, and Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina. They're going to be meeting with the president here in a few weeks to update them on their work. And this is a legislation that is moving forward. I know that this has a lot of privacy issues with a lot of you, and this is going forward with a lot of steam, folks. So love to hear your feedback on this. I have a link up to it in the show notes, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. I'm going to jump right into the audio comments because I got a ton of them to get through, and I got some emails as well, and I have not reviewed any of these, so I don't know what we've got for audio comments tonight. I'll get through these, and then we'll get into the voicemails real quick and get you guys on your way. But again, if you have comments on today's show, geeknews@gmail.com, voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. Here comes the first voicemail.
Hi, Todd. This is Bree.
Hey, Bree.
I sent you a government computer news article 2 weeks ago, which you posted as a user link about the U.S. losing the cyber war to attackers.
Yeah.
Yes, it worries me that government officials are admitting that we are fighting a losing battle with cyber attackers. But maybe this is the tip of a burgeoning attempt to support all-out efforts to push Internet skills in U.S. schools.
Oh.
I understand that in China and some other countries, hackers, are being recruited into national cyber armies devoted to hacking in that government's interests. When Russia launched Sputnik, the U.S. worried about our getting behind the Soviet Union in space.
True.
So the U.S. launched an all-out effort to support science in schools.
We did.
As a result, the U.S. surged ahead in space exploration. Hopefully, with Janet Napolitano and others in the U.S. government sounding the alarm, the money Congress is spending will find its way in a significant manner toward developing our own cyber army. It seems like, as far as spending money is concerned, Congress and the rest of government follow the axiom, the wheel that squeaks the loudest gets oiled first.
It's true.
With jobs and health care taking front stage, something major, like stealth attacks on government and industry computer networks, doesn't seem to get the attention it needs. That's my take, and I'm Bree from Spring Lake, D.C. Bye-bye.
Ooh, that was fast, Bree. You know something? I would almost predict that there has to be, I can't imagine DOD and Homeland Security not having some ramped up division that's basically focusing on this. But I'm sure it's very small. I can't imagine how many people it would be. But you're right. I think we need, you think about the infrastructure of this country and, just think if someone shut down or took control of a nuclear power plant, shut down our grid with the overtaking of data networks, banking industry intrusion, stealing of trade secrets from national. It's huge. It is huge. I would predict that cybersecurity is going to be a lifelong career for many people. And you could probably about name your own salary if you're good. And if I was to do a whole new career field, if I was to start over, that's probably what I would focus on. A little bit on the mundane, but you would be, I'm sure, days and weeks of boredom followed by, minutes of sheer terror as you're fighting off a cyber attack. But I think you're right. I think you're right on that. I really do. So love to hear. Anybody that's got any comments on Bree's comments on, getting some of our schools and our industry and colleges ramped up to basically teach cybersecurity. The problem is, how many of those kids would use it for the ill will? That's the next question as well. Okay, thanks, Bree, for your call. Of course, Bree's a longtime listener of the show, and I met Bree when I was out in D.C. one time, and thanks for being a longtime subscriber and part of the Ohana here. All right, here's the next one.
Yeah, this is Robert Bailey. I'm trying to get internet access on a airport extreme. Roommate has got access through Comcast.
Right.
And I'm trying to get my computer to come up. And I can't get it up. His is running fine. My phone number is...
I don't have an airport extreme, but I didn't want to play Robert. I didn't want to play your phone number on the air here or turn this over to our listening audience. But maybe we can get someone that has an airport extreme to basically give us some resources to point you at. Hopefully you've got that fixed already. I hope you've already figured a way to get on. I do know that some, even with my Mac connecting to some of my Wi-Fi devices, I've had trouble when the security level is really high. So I guess it also depends on what kind of Wi-Fi card you have in your computer. If you actually have a Mac that's trying to connect to an airport, it should be pretty flawless. But if you want, email me at geeknews@gmail.com. Give me a little more detail if you could. And I'll see if one of the Ohana can help us out. Maybe we can get a link for you relatively quickly. I'll have your number. If anyone in the Ohana has any good gouge on the airport extreme, hey, drop me an email here real quick, and then I'll get this over to Robert. Thanks for calling, Robert. Okay, here's the next voicemail.
Hey, Todd. It's Seth from Michigan.
Hey.
I'm calling up in regard to show 556, and you had a listener call in, and he really must have an awesome microphone because he did sound really great. If he does ever end up having a podcast, then I would support it. I would probably be listening to it. And then in show 557, your most recent show, your son has a 10-year-old PS2, and you're wondering whether it's worth getting a PS3. I'm not sure if you have a Blu-ray player yet, but the PS3, as you're probably aware, can play Blu-rays.
Well, that's true.
I hear it does very good upscaling of DVDs, if you have a large DVD collection at all. I know you do a lot of streaming content, but if you have any physical discs,
rented,
that would help out for your content to look better on your high-def TV. And I have a question, lastly. I'm wondering what the approximate file size is for a streaming high-def content, so things from like Netflix or from Apple TV, anything like that, for say like an hour worth of some 720p or maybe full 1080p content. And the reason why I'm asking is because I looked on the internet recently and I noticed that Charter's bandwidth cap for up to between 1 and 15 megabit download speeds, their bandwidth cap is 100 gigabytes per month, which I personally think is quite low, especially if you are doing high-def content streaming. I'm talking about legal content as well.
Right.
And I realize Comcast has their limit at 250 gigabytes, which I think is fairly reasonable. It would be nice if they keep in mind that down the road we should probably have that increased. But for now, that's fairly reasonable, in my opinion. The 100 gigabyte download with Charter, though, is quite limited. I'm currently on AT&T just with a 2 meg down right now, and as far as I'm aware, AT&T does not have a bandwidth cap. Not that I can get a whole lot on 2 meg download anyway. All right, keep up the great show, and I'd like to hear what you think about the size of high-def content. All right, bye.
I think you can probably get away with streaming SD content with a 2 meg connection. You definitely are going to have a challenge doing 720p at that. I don't know what the actual data throughput is. I'll see if I can do a little research on that and get an answer for you. There's probably some calculators out there that show how much bandwidth you actually use at those resolutions. I know that when I'm streaming on my Roku box, I'm streaming in generally 720p. Sometimes I don't think it goes to 1080i. But really, the video is great. They have a great algorithm. I use my DSL connection, which is 4 megs down, I think, on the DSL on one of my connections here to do my Roku streaming. I have a much bigger connection on my cable, but that's just what box I've got it connected to for the wireless. And it does fine. But I don't know what the bandwidth limitation or bandwidth amount is it's actually using. I'm sure we can figure that out and see if I can get an answer for you by the next show. Thanks for calling in, and see if your DSL provider has one layer higher. In other words, if you can get to 4 or 6 megs, that will really help you out. You'll be able to do HD easy at a 4 or 6 meg level. I got an email here from a voicemail from Jeffrey. He's actually going out to the West Coast to do some coverage for HP. I think he's going to give us a little heads up what's going on.
Hey, Todd. Jeffrey Powers here over at Geekazine.
How are
you doing? Aloha to everybody out there. And I just wanted to call in, and I agree with you on the RFID, the little dongle thing for the iPhone. Although it makes a great idea to turn it into a remote control, I think I would lose that faster than anything. Of course, when we went out to CES, we saw that Wave It, which was also another attachment to an iPad or iPhone or iPod, which would let you remote control. It was also a cool presenter's screen thing, and that was a pretty cool thing there, right there. So, hey, of course, Todd, you might know this, but the people out there, I just want to let them know, hey, we're going to actually be, myself and Andy McCaskey are going to be out in California this week, and we're going to be doing the HP Roadshow, which is their converged infrastructure division. Of course, HP does these roadshows for all their divisions. So we're going to be working with the converged infrastructure, and we're going to be doing a lot of video capturing some of the sessions and some of the speeches and talking to some of these people in the converged infrastructure area. And wanted to let you know that we're going to be doing that while you are heading off to South by Southwest. So unfortunately, I won't be joining you over there. So if anybody's interested, we're going to be doing those videos on Thursday. We might not be doing a live stream. Depends on if we got bandwidth or not. But we will definitely be sending out the videos. Also, we're going to be doing a contest where you could win some cool prizes. I can't really say what they are just yet, but it does sound like there's going to be a laptop involved in there. But once again, they've got to get it all worked out. But what we're going to be doing is we're going to be putting out codes while we do the videos, whether it be streamed or whether it be post-produced videos. And you can then go and enter those codes for a chance to win those cool prizes. So
I'm going to have to get into that.
Of course, you can go over to Andy's site, sdrnews.com, for more information, or my site, geekazine.com, for more information on there. So anyway, have fun at South by Southwest. I'd love to go with you, but I think I will have tapped my resources for the week unless I can find somebody that's willing to get my plane ticket and put me up in the hotel for a few days. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But anyway, and then, of course, I want to let everybody know about The Day in Tech History, which is one of my other podcasts, which is a 7-day-a-week rundown of IT, technology, and computer history. And that's found over at dayintechhistory.com. Thanks a lot, Todd, and have fun at South by Southwest, and we will see you on the flip side. Take care.
Hey, have fun out in San Francisco, and I haven't got your stuff shipped yet, Jeffrey. I need to do that tomorrow if it's going to make it there in time. So I've got it all ready. I just need to get it in a FedEx box and get it out to you. All right, let me go ahead. I got one more voicemail. Boy, we're running real long tonight, so it is what it is. Here's a voicemail from Trucker Tom, and the last voicemail, then we'll bounce through the emails real quick.
Hey, Todd. Tom Wiles here, a.k.a. Trucker Tom. Couple of things. I've been kind of catching up on your recent podcasts. The first thing, I've been hearing you were talking about truck security and trucks being hijacked and the criminals sending out some sort of a disabling signal to disable the Qualcomms.
Yeah.
The GPS, that's the most prevalent system, is the Qualcomm system. It's been around for quite a few years now, and they've come up with newer versions of it, but it's still basically the same. It is a two-way satellite connection, and it's pretty much based on text. It sends text messages back and forth, basically. You know, so I've never really heard of that. I have to be honest, I've never heard of that. As far as security goes, now it's going to be different for different drivers. You know, let's say they go to a high-value electronics place or something, then they really have to watch it because high-value loads are obviously high-value targets. But for me in general, you know, I'm just kind of out here hauling general freight, and it varies in value. Sometimes it can be a high-value load, and so other times it's more of an average-value load. But I just have to watch out where I park. I watch out where I spend the night, stay out of bad neighborhoods. Generally speaking, the bad neighborhood isn't going to come to you. You've got to go to it. And so that's a basic idea of truck security. You know, lock the doors, take the key, keep valuables out of sight, lock the trailer doors, so on and so forth. The other thing I wanted to quickly comment on, in the most recent podcast, you were talking about the way Apple is kind of controlling the App Store for the iPhone and the iPod Touch, and the term that came to mind was Apple Police State. Need I say more? And it's going to apply to the iPad as well.
Yes,
happy
it will.
Apple Police State. You can find me at TruckerTomPodcast.com. Keep up the great work, Todd. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Tom, and a very cool update from you on basically truck security. And yes, I like that. Apple Police State. Nice. Very nice. Okay, I did have a response in the Ustream chat for our actually video coverage. If you're streaming 480p, 1 hour is 1,476 megs. At 720p, it's 2.7 gigs. 1080p is 6.6 gigs at 1080p. So I guess that's, 1.4 gigs at 480p, 2.7 at 720, 6.6 gigs at 1080. Okay, so there we go. Oh, no, that's for a 90-minute movie, 90 minutes. So if you're doing 720p at 90 minutes, 2.7 gigs, so that's what you can figure. You know, you do one or two movies a weekend, you're probably safe with that. So thanks, guys, for getting my back there on Ustream. We are, like, crazy long. And I got to get through these emails because if I don't, we're going to be killing ourselves when we get to South by Southwest. I got an email from Frank saying, hey, more stories on the laptop issue and about the parents and about this spy cam going on by a school district. I've got a couple of links there. Thanks for that, Frank. I got an email from Shane. Hey, Todd, so on our show notes about USPS Saturday to service. The USPS could deliver once per week, and that would be plenty. It is an outdated service that could be done away with entirely. How can the post office lose money when they benefit from laws that prevent FedEx and UPS from delivering mail from under a dollar? being inefficient and paying employees ridiculous retirement benefits, Shane in Georgia. Got an email from, Michael? No, I won't tell my kids. Thanks for your email on that. I appreciate it. Hey, Ron was on watching the other night, and I was trying to remember which animal we cut loose here in Hawaii. The mongoose. The mongoose in Hawaii was brought in and introduced to get rid of the rat infestation. Rats run at night. Mongooses sleep at night. Mongooses run during the day. It just didn't work. But anyway, Ron also goes on to say, to address a question about Saturday delivery from the post office, here's my take on it. I can do without mail delivery on Saturdays. That has no impact on me. I would, however, want to be able to use a point of service location, drop off packages, or do other post office transactions. Sometimes Saturday is the only day I get to do that kind of stuff. That said, I think that the proposal the post office putting forth is limited only to limiting Saturday delivery service. Post offices with Saturday hours should still remain open on Saturdays. The issue is supposed to affect only delivery. Lastly, have you noticed I'm making show comments on more relevant time basis? Well, I received an iPod Touch for my birthday this year, and it pushed me over the edge, and now have transitioned from downloading all my podcasts once a week to a daily basis. So now I listen to your show on my morning drive the day it's released instead of 1 to 2 weeks behind. Isn't technology great? Keep up the great work on the show. You're always shows number one in my listening batting order. All the other shows take a backseat. Ron. Thanks, Ron. Appreciate that. Got an email here from Ken. He says, hey, Todd, I have been a videographer for 20 years. I'm very familiar with video format. Just to let you know that Google has purchased the ON2 company that is responsible for the VP6 codec. That Flash Video has licensed. The VP6 codec was so efficient, it enabled Flash Video to take over the online streaming business from Apple QuickTime, Real Media, and Microsoft WMV. Adobe chose H.264 to be the format for high-definition video, 720p and 1080p. For the Flash Player, ON2 was also developed for a new codec called VP8 that also supports high-definition video. In my opinion, VP8 is actually superior to H.264. Now that Google owns the rights to this codec, I believe it will be their intention to free this video format to OG to format this. I believe it will be their intention to free this video format to OGG for open source development HTML5 or license it for a discounted rate compared to H.264. The current OGG format video is based on a video codec developed by ON2 called VP3. By purchasing the ON2 company, Google now has all the tools to offer superior video using HTML5. It can now free itself from the Flash video format and H.64. What do you think, Kenneth? Ken, I think you're on something, man. I think you've hit the nail on the head. We'll see what's going to happen with this. Hey, Greg, definitely. I'm going to be in Austin. I'll keep you in the loop. I'll let you know what's going on. And again, get into Austin on Thursday afternoon. Are you coming out to South by Southwest at all? Bill, also, you're going to be in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Once I get up there, we'll figure out a time to do a meetup when I'm up in the Dallas area. Got an email, of course. I got the email from Trucker Tom. Got an email from John. Hey, John, I was surfing the net and stumbled upon your podcast. I really enjoyed your show. You're looking great, my friend. Take care, John. And John's a friend of mine from high school. So very cool. I got an email from JC Flyer on Twitter. He said, hey, I thought you'd get a kick out of the U.S. advertiser, spend more on digital than print study. And that was the same link I talked about earlier in the show. Got a really lengthy article here from Terrence on ad blocking, which I will save for the next show because it's so long. I'll definitely star that and come back to it. So Terrence, will get to you on the next show about that. And I got an email here from Bill. Hey, Todd, Bill here again. Just want to say you heard it right. Topeka, Kansas is now being called Google, though it mainly referred to that by the news stations here and a few local organizations. Your show is the second I've heard mention the topic. 2600 Off the Hook by Hacker Weekly was the other show. Thanks, Bill. Hey, Bill, thanks for that. Everyone, thanks for hanging out with me. Man, we're long. I'm sorry. Forgive me, but that's just the way it is. Everyone, take care. Have a great week. We'll see you in Austin. And going to be a great show. We're going to have a lot of fun. I'll get something figured out. We'll do something live. Don't worry. We're gonna have a good time in Austin. A lot of great content coming. It's going to be a whole mix. Audio, video, off-the-cuff stuff. I'm just kind of go freelancing, folks. That's what it's all going to be about in Austin. So look forward to the content coming from there. I'll be doing a lot more blogging while I'm in Austin the 3 days. So who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? I'm sure we're going to have lots of stories on Monday. But anyway, flying out Wednesday night, get into Austin Thursday. It'll be a Thursday night show sometime probably 8, 9 p.m. Austin time, and which is central, I guess. And but hey, we'll see you then. Everyone take care. Thanks for hanging out. Aloha.